Welcome to Life and Sirens, Behind and On the Scene, a podcast by first responders. We're your hosts, Sophie,
Jamie,
and Aubrey.
The content provided in this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered medical advice. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policies or positions of any medical institutions, emergency medical services, or healthcare organizations. Patient privacy is a top priority, and all discussions involving real-world emergency situations are de-identified and altered to ensure confidentiality. Always consult with a qualified healthcare professional or your local EMS protocols before making any decisions regarding patient care or medical practices. Listener discretion is advised, as some topics may include discussions of real-world emergency situations.
Welcome to another episode of... Oh my god, I forgot our podcast name.
Oh what? How did
god.
You do that? Okay, that all has right. to stay.
Welcome to another episode of Life and Sirens. No, you are not sitting in your in-service today. You're listening to a podcast. However, we are going to be talking about EMS documentation. We have so wonderfully titled this episode, The Good, the Bad, and the Legally Dangerous. Dun, so dun, buckle dun. Up. Here we go.
Honestly, this is going to be way cooler than your in-service, I promise.
Absolutely.
So hang in there.
So today we have two documentation little nerds with us. I am a decent documenter. I feel like I cover my basics pretty well. But Soph and Aubrey really take it to the next level. You're going to be able to see, feel, smell the human being that they are documenting about. And it's pretty bomb. So they're gonna chat with you guys about it.
Yeah, one time we almost went to court.
Man, and were we ready?
We were ready. We had a good run ticket.
We
also,
did.
Side note, run ticket. That is something we call patient reports or PCRs in our region. I recently found out that most of the country does not call them tickets.
Oh, really?
Oh, what do they call them?
Just PCRs or run reports.
Their name?
Oh.
Right. We call them run tickets, and it's vast in our region. Like,
oh,
this
yeah.
is not just like we did not know this. So I apologize if we use the term run ticket. We are referring to patient care reports.
So just to kick this off, kind of the mind frame that I get in whenever I write a run ticket is I always have these three things in mind. I always want to write this run ticket for the receiving facility, because a lot of people, if you don't have this technology, you might not, I don't know, you should ask your the hospital that you transport to frequently, but a lot of services have the capability of syncing their run tickets with the receiving hospital. And believe it or not, some people actually do read your run tickets while they're sitting there with that patient. I used to work in an ER and I did that all the time. I would creep on EMS's run tickets and they're very helpful. You know, you don't always get the whole background or kind of what the scene looked like or what they walked into. So it's nice to, while you're sitting there with that patient in a facility, to be able to have that information.
And if you send your run ticket to the facility, it becomes a part of that patient's chart.
Right.
Or at least that important. Should be it. It should be. And yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're writing it for the facility staff. You are writing this for court. So I don't care if you're writing a lift assist. You always want to put enough information that you have a leg to stand on if you ever have to argue a point.
That they don't even need you because you have such a good run ticket.
Exactly. And then lastly, you're writing this ticket for you. You want to be able to read this run ticket and remember exactly what you walked into that day. Or if you don't remember, you have enough information to negate any issues that come up. So I always put like weird little things that happen that I know will make me remember that call.
Yeah, that's a good point.
For sure. And if you guys have ever done or been a part of QA, there will inevitably be a ticket PCR that you come across that you are like, I have no idea what this call was even about.
Right.
Like, I can't figure out, other than the primary impression, like, I can't figure out what this patient even needed from you or what you did. And you'll read those. And the last thing you want is to end up in a situation where you have to explain yourself. And that's your narrative. It has almost nothing in it.
And we run so many calls. There's no way you're going to remember all of them. Like, there's 0% chance. So remember, if you didn't document it, it didn't happen. Not only did it not happen in real life, it's probably not in your brain.
For sure. I had to go to court one time on a call that I ran, and they were very, very concerned about the lack of administration for Zofran. Very concerned. Like, the defense had so many questions about...
They will pick the weirdest things.
Zofran for me. And for me, I was like, that is just, like, a negligible point. Like, why are we talking about this?
Yeah.
But they were just going hard after it. And so I had documented well enough the state that this woman was in that me not administering that medication had much more to do with not causing any more further, like, physical and mental trauma to her because of what she'd been through. And it was just better for that patient in that situation. But I documented it very thoroughly on why I didn't give that medication. And it helped me a lot in court to honestly make the defense sound kind of silly.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, not only should you be documenting what you did, please document why you didn't do something, because that's also extremely important. Because if you just leave it all out and you might've been able to do it, they're just gonna be like, well, why were you so lazy? You did nothing. Well, here's why I didn't say.
Absolutely. I think we're going to give a shout out to Alex Whitley. That was a great point that he made in medic school. He taught us that if you ever consider, even if it's just for 2 seconds, you considered an intervention, document it, and then document why you did not end up doing that intervention. And I think that is great advice, because 6 months from now, you're not going to remember why you didn't give this person Zofran. But you do right now, and if you write it down, you'll know.
Even on, like, really BLS calls, I have a section where I put, if we did not intervene in any way, I just put, no intervention was indicated or required.
Right, and we actually had this experience yesterday. We went back and looked at our patient outcomes, because we get patient outcomes, which is pretty cool. Sometimes they have a lot of information, sometimes they have none. But this particular patient, it said expired, which means that they had died, and it was like 24 hours later, and Aubrey had written that run ticket. And so we went back and looked at that run ticket to try to figure out, did we miss something? Like, basically, was this patient's death in a response to a treatment or a lack of treatment that we did? And reading her run ticket, it was so very clear why
what was happening.
Yeah, why we did what we did. And it's because she actually was not hitting any of those, like, differential markers that would lead you down the path of what she was, like, ultimately diagnosed with, and what killed her. And so that was a cool moment, because had that been my run ticket, I maybe would have had some question marks in there, like, oh, I don't really remember why I thought she was fine. And it would have been, like, enough to get me by, but because it was Aubrey's and it was so thorough, we were like, oh, yeah, absolutely. We remember every second of this. This is why it was this way.
I think you don't give yourself enough credit, Jame, but I see where you're coming from.
I read your run tickets all the time, and they are wonderful.
I don't write, like, 2 sentences. I just don't do what they do.
I QA'd you once, and I didn't know what to do because there was nothing to do. We call that the paint the picture approach. If you can't, like, read it, and, like you're reading a book, and you... I know some people don't have this, but, like, and see what's happening, then it's probably not effective enough.
For sure. And I know some services require, like, very specific formats, like ours does. Ours requires D-chart. But there are ways to still tell a story in a specific format. Now, you have to practice at it, because I am a sequential storyteller, so I tell, like, one thing after the next. And that's how I like to write run tickets as well. And I really had to adjust when we moved over to D-chart, because that is not sequential.
There is a lot of space for you to wiggle with that, though, mm-hmm. in the H.
Yes, like the pertinent, mm-hmm. like their medical history and then their, like, recent yes. history. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times I will find that my chief complaint section is actually extremely long, because I don't just put, like, what their complaint is. I put how we found them and, like, all the things, and I will move that into history.
And, you know, the thing is, so our service lets us do a variation of D-chart. So mine actually has more than D-chart, but I also put in there, like, for the H, which we'll get into D-chart in a second and why we think that's probably the most effective method. If we do, I think it is history of present injury or illness. Like, that's in there too. So, like, that's where I do my actual, like, story version narrative.
I like that.
Yeah, it's not, like, super dense. I don't put, like, what I did, really, but I put, like, this is what was happening. We did intervene.
Yeah. Like, do you guys write Like, do you describe their surroundings?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's something that nobody taught me to do.
I always put the state of the scene.
Yes. Nobody taught me to do that, but my first ever partner was Tiffany, and she was really thorough, and she described surroundings of patients, and that helps me a lot. Because I'll remember, like, the description of a living room before I'll remember the person.
So one of the things that I also put in history of present illness or injury is patient's living conditions. It's always
I like that.
In there. And I just put who they live with at home, what it might look like, if it was tidy or not. Just, like, use plain language. Like, don't be like, that place was freaking nasty. It was a hoarder home. You know what I mean?
Right, but tidy or unkempt.
Articulate
with
this.
Yeah. I had to
the home was in poor condition.
Right. We often have to describe homes sometimes as like a biohazard.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's important for the patient's, you know, case manager and things like that.
For sure.
Yeah. Again, that run ticket gets attached to or can get attached to hospital documentation. And that's super helpful for social workers. You know, you don't always get the opportunity to stick around and talk with them and have a discussion in length with them. But this gives you a chance to have this documented and accessible by all hospital staff. So
yeah,
always keep that in mind.
Part of their medical history now is that document.
Absolutely.
And we also all know the telephone game of giving report at a hospital.
Yes.
That a patient may end up in the ICU and it might be 7 days in, and that hospitalist is like, hey, I really want to know how EMS found them, like maybe X, Y, and Z isn't working, and they really want to figure out like the square one of their condition to kind of revise their course of care. And when we give report to the nurse, what we tell them is exactly what we can remember and in whatever order we give it. And then they take that information and they paraphrase it and they give it to the ER doctor. And then the ER doctor takes that information, adds their own information, and then charts it.
Yep.
And so by the time it gets to wherever your patient's definitive care is, it could have gone through like 10 sets of ears.
Yeah, and documenting some of the things that we are able to see in the field can be like life or death for that patient.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it can affect when they get discharged, where they get discharged to.
Yeah.
If they do have access to that report, like maybe it is the home is a biohazard and they are not safe living there and it is exacerbating their health conditions.
Yeah.
And all this stuff.
Which it usually is.
But they say it's fine and then they discharge home.
Yeah. Or they're with someone on scene that is very abusive. Like that can be documented. Obviously, you need to document that and report that. But sometimes people don't always listen. So at least
it's
a
in
hard
there.
Copy.
Absolutely. And also, I know a lot of us have access to this technology. The tablets that you use or computers that you use to write your run tickets often have a camera attached to them. And a lot of charting systems have the ability to attach photos. I'm a little bit obsessed with it. Maybe
Me
a little
too
obsessed.
When they told us we could take pictures of things other than patient like documentation, I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, this is going to a whole new level. But that's also something that's great for the receiving facilities for social workers. There's some things that a picture cannot replace. Let's just say that. That's clear, concise, cannot be confused. And it's documented photograph evidence, basically.
For
just
sure.
Just be sure you check with your policies.
Yes. Yeah,
manual
make sure.
Or whatever your leadership before you're just... Because there is a possibility that somehow in your device, the only way this is attaching it is like it's going to go straight to billing, which I don't know how some services work, but ours just attaches to the bottom of the PCR.
Yeah, you also want to make sure that it does not save to the computer, and if it does, that you have the ability to delete it. Because if it saves your computer, then like that's potentially a HIPAA issue. So make sure that you get all your things squared away before you do that. But it is a really cool thing that our software can do.
All right, let's talk about DCHART. So D C H A R T. Okay, there's lots of extra things. Some places have like a different version with like extra letters. At our service, as long as you have exceptional or adequate documentation, they will let you do a variation of DCHART. You have to do DCHART, but you can add in things. We clearly have, as you'll see in just a moment. So let's talk about dispatch. So for my D, I put dispatch and general impression. I put like who we are, how we got dispatched, how we got there, what I found immediately on scene as soon as I got there. So what the patient looked like, if there are other responders, and what they were doing. That's what my dispatch. Oh, that's interesting. Dispatch / general impression is what mine says.
Okay.
See, mine is dispatched is just... Oh, big engine. Meow. Mine is just dispatched is who we are, how we got there, and what we got sent for.
Yeah.
That is it. That's all I put in dispatch.
Mine is that.
Oh, and the address of where we're going.
I never put the address.
Oh, I always put the address.
I put
the address,
like,
too.
Medic 2 responded immediately, license sirens upon dispatch to the dispatch location of, if it's a private residence, of a private residence for, and then complaint. And I'll put, like, a public building or whatever it is, depending on that. But I just don't want to get the address wrong, so I don't copy it into my...
I copy and paste it from the
CAD. From the CAD, yeah.
Yep.
I also put in dispatch who called EMS. Was it a family member? Was it a bystander? Was it law enforcement?
I like that. I didn't put that.
I especially put it. I don't always put it, but I'll put it if, like, law enforcement called us.
I will add law enforcement requested. But honestly, I put all of that in C.
Yeah. Hmm. And it's in your like actual
run ticket.
Yeah.
The flow chart. Next is chief complaint. This one is very simple for me.
What did the patient say?
Yes, that is it.
And that's serious.
Patient
what
is
did
complaining
the patient
of.
Say? You're putting your general impression and things like that, or your primary and secondary impressions, especially if you use the same software. But most softwares have this. ImageTrend does too. That is what they're billing for. This is what the patient's complaining of.
Mm-hmm. That is, I do not do that. I don't just put the patient complaint. I put, like, upon arrival, medic 15 found 66-year-old female laying supine in living room. Patient states that she had a fall at an unknown time this morning. Like, I will literally put all of that. Like, how we located them, where we located them, what they're immediately complaining of, what they said happened. And I don't really ever talk about other responders on scene unless they've done interventions.
That's why I've created dispatch / general impression, because I think that should go there, because that's like, I'm stepping onto the scene. This is what I see. That's why I feel like that belongs there.
Yeah.
Okay. And that way, chief complaint can just be like, patient states, I'm dead.
Right?
Fair.
My chief complaint is actually, now my primary impressions and chief complaint on, like, our charting system are very clearly. But in my narrative, it is not clear. It's not always very clear.
Yeah.
Because I give you, like, a whole synopsis of what this human is complaining
of. I think that's fine, as long as you're
of.
Putting what they state.
Yeah.
Emphasis on, this is what they think's wrong with them.
There's 1,000 ways to skin a cat.
Yeah. You're just...
What? Don't skin a cat.
Why are
don't
you doing
do
that?
Why do they say that?
I don't know. I was just thinking that.
And, there's
and
actually,
why am I repeating it?
There's actually not that many ways.
No, I hope not. I hope you haven't practiced that many times to know.
Only
I
once.
I have no idea. Oh, my God.
All right, anyway. So we've talked about chief complaint. Now we talk about the H, which is history. In mine, I put history of present illness or injury, depending on what the call is for, or sometimes it's both.
Do you ever list their, like, literal medical history and meds?
Yeah, this is where I put that. Mm-hmm. And I also put, this is where I put your kind of, like, development of chief complaint. I put patient explained that they fell out of bed today, they hit their, you know, I do all that here. And then I put, they have a patient has a history of, I'll put that, any allergies. And then that's where I also put patient living condition. If someone is a caretaker for them, I also put that there. I put any implanted medical devices in a code status, and I put that all in history of present illness.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. But my patient explained part, where that's where I start talking about, like, what we did, too. After I put that, I'll do a little paragraph below that of, like, then we started getting things going.
Yeah.
See, I just use this section as strictly medical history and allergies, and then if it's a trauma, their last oral intake, and that is it. That is all that goes in this section. Mm-hmm. I don't start talking about anything until the assessment.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense for it to go there too. Like, I'm already talking about them, so I just keep talking about
them. Sure. I like that, and it does hit. It is their history. Mm-hmm. It does make sense
their new
to go there.
That's why I put present history and illness or injury.
I like that.
I like that too.
And then assessment.
So, for assessment, this is where I really start getting into the weeds.
This is
getting
what,
into the good stuff.
This is what hurts my feelings every time I look at your D chart.
I know.
Is
you
the
don't
assessment
like this section.
Yeah.
So I've broken up the assessment section into four subsections, basically.
I have also.
Oh my gosh.
What are yours? Stop.
Mine's my initial assessment. So literally, what do I see when I walk in? How do I find the patient? What's their mentation?
I got that too.
Skin, GCS, all the things. And then I also put here who is with the patient as far as like, is the fire department standing next to him? Is a family member standing next to them? Is a random bystander trying to do CPR on them? This is where that goes. And then I have a secondary assessment.
I got that.
So that's just what the patient's, all of the information that I gather. Really, this is broken up chronologically for me.
Yeah.
Secondary assessment is where I document all of the information that I gathered while on scene and moving to the truck. So what did family tell me? What did the patient tell me? What was the handoff from the fire department? What did I see in the house? All of the things. Then I have a suspected illness section. So it's basically like, what are my differentials?
Yep.
And then I have an ongoing assessment. So what did I find? Now that I've already done my initial assessment, I kind of have an idea of what's going on, what progressed from that, and then what interventions I did and how did they react to that?
I put all that, like the primary and secondary, and then I put airway and oxygenation interventions, and then I put cardiac monitor / electrical interventions and assessments, and then I put changes in patient's condition, and then I put any other interventions, and then I put how they responded to them.
Oh.
Yeah, my R is everything that you just said that you put in your assessment. That's everything that goes in my treatment.
Okay.
I just go into detail about how they responded to treatment, and anything that they got treated with before we got there goes in my, I don't put that unless it was like aspirin or, you know, I took a Tylenol, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like something that we're not going to do because they did it.
Yeah, something another responder did or something like that.
Right. I always put what other responders are doing because that is very important. It's very important. And I don't do this to get anybody in trouble, but there is some times when we have to undo something that was being done. And I think it's really important to document what was being done in case it becomes detrimental, because it did happen in an EMS setting, but it wasn't you. And it's very important to put that, because if the patient's like, well, they put this oxygen mask on me, but didn't plug it into oxygen or whatever. I'm not saying that happened, but I'm just saying, like, you need to make sure that it's documented that, yes, that happened, but it was prior to your arrival. And
absolutely.
We work with other types of responders. Like, a lot of these, I don't know, like, factories and stuff will have, like, emergency responders inside of these factories, mm-hmm. and they are not as widely skilled.
Their continuing ed is maybe not as up to par.
Yeah.
But also, it's important to document what other responders do, because that's accountability.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be on scene and you're going to operate one outside of your scope, or you're going to be managing your scope improperly, or maybe you just made an honest mistake, like, that's totally fine. We can chat about it.
Yeah.
But that's just accountability. Like, I want you to document the things I do. I want to document the things you do. It's not malicious, but you do have to be accountable in your patient care. And I think that that's good for everybody.
I mm-hmm. think it's really good, too, because there have been times, even in transfers, patient transfers, where I have had to be like this, and my husband, Houston, poor thing, actually was very honest about some interventions that were going on at the sending facility, and there was mismanagement of this patient. He, unfortunately, because he documented the mismanagement of this patient, lost an award because there was inappropriate patient care, not by him, but part of the team, which was the sending facility. But, like, it's worth that. You need to document these things that are happening that are dangerous. It is accountability, like James said, like, it sucks, and we're not doing it to be mean. Like, it just has to be in there. That's part of what happened. It could be detrimental down the line.
Absolutely. And if I do something on a scene that is detrimental to that patient, I expect the same thing.
Yep.
Because your patient care report is objective. Like, it is facts. It is what we did. It is what happened. Occasionally, there will be some opinions in there, but for the most part, it's very objective.
It should be, this is what happened, and this is why. Sometimes we don't always know that. But.
For sure. Yeah, my R, like, so my treatment section literally starts with how we move the patient. Mm-hmm. Like, that is the beginning.
That's a different, I made that a different section for me. Transport and patient movement and positioning.
So you do double T's.
Mm-hmm. Double T's.
Gotcha. My T starts with, like, transport, non-emergency to said hospital.
Yeah, I put patient was moved, how they were moved, how they were positioned on the stretcher, and I said after initial interventions, non-emergency transport began to the ER. On arrival to the ER, patient was brought inside on the cot, taken to assigned patient room. Blah, 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 all that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll do like their any changes in condition, any interventions I did in route, that all goes under T.
Definitely.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. R is everything that we do on scene prior to transporting. T is everything that we do while transporting.
Interesting. That makes sense. That makes so much sense, but I can't do that.
I can't either, but yeah.
That's why I can't switch it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because R is before we transport, T is while we're transporting.
Oh, see, mine's just kind of...
But that's how, because mine has to be chronological. It has to be sequential.
Yeah. And that's because that's how you're taught.
Yeah.
And I did that enough, but that's why I just moved it to my, I basically write a narrative. My narrative, like if you print out my run tickets, sorry, if you print out my PCRs, they're like pages and pages long. Like it's interesting to see it because we're used to that like scroll. Yeah. We don't really get to see how long they are.
How long they really are,
it's
yeah.
It's impressive.
I always think that I don't write very long ones at all until I print it.
Yeah.
And then you're like,
yeah.
Oh my goodness.
It actually is quite long.
Or like they send it because the DA is getting your whatever, like
yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, we really did some stuff.
So this was wild.
Let's go.
Yeah. I think that the reason that I do that I write my assessment section like I do is because I want whoever's reading the run ticket to know exactly what happened on this call, what interventions I performed, and their patient's responses to it within that section. And then if they need more follow-up, like more specifics, they go down to treatment and look.
They're I think like, that makes sense.
They're like, oh, well, you gave Dex. How, like, what was your dose of Dex? And then they can go and look.
Yeah, like, I feel like your assessment section is all of your patient care. Like, yes. That's the point where you're like, this is my human. This is what is wrong with them. This is what I'm doing to fix it. This is how they responded to it. That is my R&T.
Yeah.
That's my treatment and transport. Mm-hmm. I put it in there because assessment to me is truly just a physical
what
assessment.
Physical assessment.
Yeah.
I think this is great, though, because if you feel like you're being boxed in by your service or company saying you need to use D-chart, just know that like this is very possible to make it your own.
Absolutely. Like, all three of us use a different version of the same.
Yeah. My partner's D-chart is, you know, an EMT version of D-chart, and it's wonderful. Like, you can just make it, you can make it yours. Mm-hmm. You don't need to resist. It's okay. But
do you guys use the E?
Yes. I do.
What does E stand for you?
Exceptions.
Okay, mine is extenuating circumstances.
Basically, that's the same thing.
Yeah. That's just where I put, like, if it's a refusal, I write the refusal documentation. If anything weird happened on that call, if there were any time delays, if the patient did not sign for themselves, it's just all that.
Yeah, that all goes
in. I just make that part of the transfer of care section.
Yeah. Transfer of care.
That's what I will use E if there is anything strange that happened, if there's any altercations that happen, if we have to like request a supervisor for some reason.
Yeah.
That all goes in E.
And I just want to point out that like especially if you're doing transfers and we're talking about like transfer of care and like positioning and stuff and that like E and all that. Okay. If your patient walked to the cot or said I'm gonna get up and stand, and the reason why they're ordering the transfer by ambulance is because they can't walk, don't put that they can't walk. Just be honest.
Yeah,
it sucks. Yeah. But just like, you're not trying to get anybody in trouble, just be honest. Do not commit fraud, because that's fraud.
Yeah, you don't want to be pulled into like a Medicare fraud case. Like, no. You just don't want that. Just put that they can't, that they can or they cannot, or whatever is true for that human.
100%.
And sometimes the reason that they need an ambulance is not because they can't walk. It's because they're on oxygen, or it's for
some
other reason.
Yeah, and you can
document
that.
But yeah, that's something that you run into a lot in convalescent services or like transfer services, especially to like the like BLS level. It's a lot of making sure that the medical necessity matches what you're actually doing and not allowing anyone to bully you into fabricating said medical necessity.
Don't do that. while we're at it, let's talk about some tips and tricks for documentation. That's obviously our style, how we go through our D chart. But let's talk about how we can help you. So one big thing is like use very objective language. Like do not make things your feelings. We have lots of feelings, but don't leave all your opinion-based language out of it.
Y'all know like with AP English where your teacher would slice your paper with a red pen and then be like fluff.
Yeah.
I feel like,
I went to the store and it was so nice out there.
Yes, I think that's the, you have to stay objective. Don't, like, put fluffy things in there.
Yeah, and same thing goes for, like, things we feel like in the way of, like, the difference between appeared intoxicated and patient had slurred speech on steady gait and a strong odor of alcohol. Or there was, I even get a little sketched out with strong odor, but maybe, like, there was drug or alcohol paraphernalia on scene. Like, stuff like that. Okay, that's possibly why they are altered. That's possibly why they have this unsteady gait. But don't just be like, they smelled like alcohol. Their car smelled like alcohol. Like, don't do not put that. Or you're just setting yourself up for court.
Yes, there are objective ways to describe somebody's behavior that is going to lead any reasonable person to believe that they were in X, Y, or Z state.
Yeah. Yep. Don't be like, the patient was delusional. Patient was experiencing visual and auditory hallucinations. Like we said, don't use weird jargon that can be misinterpreted. Like, we do use some things in this field. A prime example, we all say run tickets, and a lot of people if it's not a global medical term or a global, like, at least national term that we use to explain some type of injury or illness, probably don't use it.
One of them is SOB. For shortness of breath.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a great point.
Yep, because that stands for something else.
Yeah, don't. Mm-hmm. Or LOC.
Patient is SOB. Bad news bears. Yeah,
they're bad SOB.
Right, or LOC. Is that level of consciousness or loss of consciousness?
Yes, I don't like that one. Mm-hmm. Austin and I have that argument sometimes. Right.
A lot of times, if you're reading it, you can gain context clues with what that person meant, but like don't make somebody do that. Yeah. I put it in my run ticket, so I should change that.
Yeah, just make sure whenever you're using those, like, medical abbreviations and stuff, it's actual. And you can look up, like, medical abbreviations that they use for, like, billing and coding, and that's kind of, that's who's going to be reading your stuff. And that's, like, very standardized stuff. Like, they're textbooks of these terms. Just make sure if you have any questions of whether it's can be abbreviated. If you're unsure, the answer is no. That's like my life motto. If you're unsure, answer is no.
Just type it out.
Yep. And truthfully, it just comes down to us being lazy. Like, it is nice to get your run tickets done quicker, but like, just type it out. It's okay.
So I think every service does this differently. Some services do everybody that you encounter is a refusal. Some people do. Only people that have a medical complaint are considered a patient, and therefore you do refusals, but you don't do no treats.
Yes.
And then some services say that everybody you encounter, you write a run ticket on, but if they don't have a complaint, they can be a no treat. They do have a complaint, they can be a refusal. There's issues with every system. However, whatever your system is, your refusals and no treats should not be that much shorter than your actual run tickets.
Mm-hmm. And we could talk unpopular about this for, like, opinion. Hours, I think. And people get really mad. I mean, you know what? Just come at me if you get mad. This is just my opinion. I think that most patients who are sick of any actual illness or complaint, the refusal should be an ALS run ticket.
I agree.
Yeah.
And people come after me for that one. And I understand this is not conducive for all systems. And I'm not saying call paramedic or ALS intercept just because this patient wants to refuse. I'm saying if you are there on scene and you have the ability to assess everything possible, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, my rule is that if this was going to be an ALS call,
definitely that,
then
bare
it is
minimum.
An ALS refusal. Like, but some people don't even believe that there is such thing as an ALS refusal.
No, they do not believe that. And that is very, 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 very...
Which is wild.
I'm upset with you. I don't believe in the paramedic putting a 12 lead on a patient, saying it's fine, and then the EMT doing the run ticket.
I cannot even imagine.
That's happened to me.
Doing that.
No, I didn't do that to an EMT. A paramedic did that to me as an EMT.
That is wild. If you have the inclination that they need a 12 lead, that's your patient, bro.
Yeah, just because we didn't transport, just because you don't ride with it, does not mean it's not your call.
My least favorite argument for not making a call ALS or not making it an ALS refusal is, well, I'm not going to do anything.
Why not?
Is it just because you're not going to do anything? Does it mean someone shouldn't be doing something?
And just because you're not doing anything now, obviously it's ALS because there is the potential that you could need to do something. That's still ALS.
Right. And we've all been EMTs in the back of the truck with something that we were super comfortable with, and it has deteriorated quickly.
But
and
then
you're
you
like
change.
Screaming for your paramedic in the front. But don't, like, set them up for that.
Right, no. And if I just think something's weird or it's just going to have to be documented oddly because the patient's verbalizing things in just, like, an atypical way, like, I'm just going to ride with it. I would never put my partner in that position knowingly. I would not.
Mm-mm. So on your refusals, still document your assessment that you did. Get vitals. Really, like, attempt to convince that patient to go to the ER with you. And we all know there's a difference between a true refusal where you are like literally battling them and you're quite concerned for their health, and a refusal where the patient has like a complaint of a minor injury and they're actually probably A-okay. Like, they got a paper cut.
Right.
But they have a complaint.
Clear, guys.
So you're like, doing a refusal. And I'm not battling that person to go to the ER because it's not actually what's good for them.
Right.
Anyway. But you still document it the same way. You still document your assessment, what you found, how that patient's condition was. And it should not just say, patient said no thank you and we left.
Yeah, and I would also like to point out, don't use language like no apparent distress. Use like, patient denies pain or discomfort. There's no abnormal findings at this time on assessment. Like, things like that. Don't say like, the patient is non-compliant, the patient's not agreeable. Just say, patient declined recommended treatment despite being advised of the possible risk, possible deterioration of condition, things like that. Like, you need to make sure you express that you have effectively communicated with this patient the possible risks up to including death if they do not go with you. Like, just be very clear about it. And I say that to patients all the time, like, that you could die.
Mm-hmm. And I use specifically use the word die.
Yeah.
I do not use, like, you might not wake up in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, I don't use implications. I say die.
Your condition could get worse. You could get sicker. Something terrible could happen and you will die. Are you okay with that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys ever have those calls where just so much happens that you're like, gosh, this is going to be a heck of a run ticket to write, and nothing like actually important happened? It was just like a chaotic call.
It was like a social disaster.
You have to like soak it in for a minute. Yeah.
Yes. And then you sit down to write the run ticket and it's not that hard to document because like nothing really actually happened. It was just like emotionally overwhelming.
Yes. No, 100%. And you just sit in the truck on the way back with the computer closed.
Yes.
You're just like, what?
You're like, I
the
can't
frick
even
frick
tackle that
happened?
Right now. Take those feelings, and then when you apply it to a refusal, that should never be how you feel. You should, all of the things that you're like, man, I this happened to me. I feel like I need to document it, but it's like an emotional thing that you really don't need to document. That does not apply to refusals.
No.
It is so important to document the language that you used when explaining refusals, the risks that you used, the potential progression of whatever is going on with this patient. That is so important to document.
Yeah, like, you do want to document the chaos on refusals and the
and
social
I
implications
quote,
and mm-hmm. things. I quote patients all the time.
We were
in
told
my
a lot in school not to quote, but I
we
need
too.
You to understand that I tried my best to get through this patient, and they were still telling me that, like,
yes, if the patient, yes, if the patient says go f- yourself,
get the f out of my house before I
there is nothing
you.
That I can say that is going to effectively like relay that information. I can't say like, the patient was less than a fan. They appeared hostile towards you.
Yes,
like,
they
seemed
upset.
There's nothing I can say that is better than what they said to me.
Yes, and as long as it's like exactly what they said, like,
yeah, like if they're talking to you about their mom, like maybe don't quote that.
Yeah,
but like it,
if
you
they
know.
Say get the F out of my house, I don't need EMS. I got a gun.
Yeah, like I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah,
I'm gonna write that
down.
Down.
I mean, there's. right, like you say, they don't quote everything, but there's certain things that are so important that like I can't imagine that not being in here. Like, it's necessary.
And sometimes with patients, they will have, you guys have all had these, they will have really vague complaints.
Yeah, and you have to.
And you will make an attempt to dig into that complaint. And
they're like, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, right? And they will just keep saying, like, weird, just weird.
I don't know what to say.
I just feel off.
And there's truly nothing that you can document. And that is when I will quote
patients
as well. Because it will essentially reiterate that, like, I made a valiant attempt to try to have them really be specific about what's going on. And they cannot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to not just write down that you made the valiant attempt. Please actually try, guys, because you're just making bad choices if you're just gonna be like, well, they don't need to go, I'm not gonna try to convince them. Okay, like, literally, this is what I say to people when they're like, oh my god, I'm so sorry I called. I'm like, this, it's my job to take people to the hospital, so I am happy to take you to the hospital. But also for people who refuse, I'm like, well, it is my job to take people to the hospital because I am not a doctor and I am limited in the assessment tools that I have in this ambulance. Mm-hmm. So that is why we take people to the hospital, or else we would just be able to do everything here, and unfortunately we cannot do everything here. So
that's
why I think you need to go.
I get so irritated with the check them out. Oh, we just need you to check them out.
I can't, and I always say I can't do what you think I'm like, what you think I can do. Like, I can't clear someone medically.
Yes, I cannot do a medical clearance. I can take their vitals and I can tell them what those are.
And they can make an educated
decision. But I'm not a physician. I cannot medically clear somebody for you. Yes. And so I get so frustrated when they're like, oh, we just need you to check them out so we can, like, take them to the jail or whatever.
Okay, well,
like, I can't do that.
It's kind of like...
like, I will literally... I will assess them. Yes. But it's not going to do for you what you think it's going to do for you.
It goes back to, if you think, I think something, the answer is no. Like, if you just think, oh, we'll just get them checked out, and then we'll... no. You need to take them to the hospital. PD.
Yes. EMS is not the answer to needing a patient stared at. And I always tell them, I have the same eyeballs as you.
Yeah.
So, they look... how they look to you is how they look to me.
Yeah.
You know, but that's what I always tell them when they say, can you just check them out? I say, I am currently doing that. And they look.
Like neonates, or not even neonates, like babies who are in, like, non-injury MVAs. And they're like, we need them checked out. I'm like, I can take their vitals and they're probably fine because it's an MVA with no injuries. But, like, I cannot clear them medically. I'm so sorry for anyone who's listening who's not in actual EMS. We cannot medically clear you, at least not at our service. We do not have that authority. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry if that's what you were wanting. We'd be happy to check your vitals as many times as you would like, but we don't have the authority to be like, you're healthy. We just don't.
Yeah. Mm-mm. And we have to make sure that we don't imply that we do when we document such encounters.
And truthfully, guys, if you're working on a scene to try to get this patient into a refusal, the answer is no. And it's going to take so much longer. It's going to take so long. Why are you doing that? Just put them in the... like, I get that there's people that do not need to go to the hospital. They certainly don't need to be transported by ambulance. We can understand that with our skills, our education, and generally common sense. However, it's not our place to make that decision. And if someone... even if someone's like, well, I don't know, I just got scared and I called you. I'm like, well, if it would give you peace of mind...
well, thank you.
We should go. If it is going to give you peace of mind, we should go. Like, that is how I feel. And I feel that way about people who do need to go. Like, sometimes you have to stay here for a while and explain to them and work with them and try to do everything. You know what's going to happen. Or you know that, like, you have room to play. But they do need to be seen in the hospital. But, like, it's okay to, like, do some of the things that they want you to do or to request your help with to accommodate their willingness to go to the hospital. If they want their favorite slippers and 3 house coats, okay. If that's what it takes, yes. Don't be that guy. Please don't be that guy that's like, you don't need that. Don't take that. We don't need that. Like, we just need to go. You called 911. Stop.
Just get the bunny slippers.
Yes, just get up. I want to see your bunny slippers.
Right. I have a sense of urgency. I spent years trying to educate the general public on what 911 was for. And I won't say that I've given up because I still have tendencies to be like, oh my gosh. Yeah. But I have made peace with the fact that people do not understand what EMS is and they do not understand what 911 does. and they think that it is like a literally just a helpline.
Well, and that's what EMS has become, and that's what they've learned that it's become, and that's just the reality of it.
Right. And so I find that I am far more at peace if I do not get so worked up about why someone called and I just kind of meet them where they are. I'm not always very good at it, but that is the attempt that I'm making.
Yeah.
But the last thing that I want to say, we got off on a tangent, but
as we do,
that I want to say about refusals is if you ever end up in court, not like you're subpoenaed to be a witness for a case.
Yeah.
But you end up in court secondary to like your being prosecuted
or not
or whatever it is, or you end up in review of the state board or anything like that of your accrediting body, it is going to be on a refusal.
Unless you did
something absolutely wild during a transport, rarely is it your patients that you take to the hospital. It's almost always refusals. And so if you need any other motivation other than like it's the right thing to do, if you go to court, it's going to be on a refusal, and you don't want that refusal to say like showed up to house, found granny, put granny in bed, left granny.
Yeah.
Like you want it to be so thorough.
Cannot emphasize this enough.
Yeah.
This is serious.
You don't want to land in that place.
And you think, oh, it's never going to happen to me. And it might not. But then it might happen to someone you know. And you're like, I cannot express to you enough how much it wrecks your world to see someone go through that. Especially when you know they're a good provider. And maybe they were just having an off day. Like, there's no room for off-run tickets, though. You can have an off day.
And if you need to close that laptop and sit for, take a nap or go do whatever.
Yeah.
Go do that. Some services allow you a full 24 hours after your shift to complete your PCRs. Some require it to be done by the end of your shift. It really just depends. But if you need to take some downtime to like get your mind right, if you need to write things down, don't make sure they're organized. Like
you guys know, I set that alarm for 5 a.m. We get off at 7. I'll finish my run tickets at 5 a.m. because then I got some sleep and I can think clearly.
Absolutely. I have been falling asleep while writing a run ticket and had to come back and revisit before.
And you have like 27 cues.
Yeah, it's just...
Yeah.
So it'll be like, patient said hospital bye.
I'm like, what did I write?
Bye. Yeah. I've definitely done that. So just if you need a safety nap, take a safety nap. But don't let powering through getting all your run tickets done make you be lazy with them, because it can ruin your whole life.
Don't let documentation be the weakest part of this job.
Mm-mm. Not to mention, we didn't even address this because I feel like services address it really, really effectively, and they leave out like all of the reasons that would actually make providers document well. But it's billing.
Yeah. Like, if we don't get paid, then we don't exist.
Right. Like, no provider is gonna change their documentation style for billing. No one pays us. Look, we're happy with the pizza party. Like, that's really just the vibe of EMS. So billing is really not the motivation you're going to get us on. It's going to be all of the things that we've talked about in this episode. But billing is important. If your service is not getting reimbursed and they're not getting paid, then you're not getting reimbursed and you're not getting paid.
You might not get a raise this year.
Right. That's your raise. That's your equipment. That's all these things. So make sure that your documentation is billable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And, like, I know there's annoying things we had to put in there, but just, like, just try your best. Like we said before, try your best.
Mm-hmm. Click the buttons.
Yeah, that's okay. And honestly, I know there's a lot we have to document, but these computer systems, they really do try to make it as easy as possible. So,
click the buttons, do the tippy tappies.
Protect yourself. Don't go to prison.
Don't go to prison.
Prison.
Don't.
I promise you don't look good in orange. Okay, bye.
This has been Life and Sirens, produced by three nerds trying to bring you content that you might actually care about.